Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
I think there's some really good ideas here. I believe there is a group of people that really want to move things forward. And I believe that these type of events and this group of people really has some tools to push things forward and make change.
We check in with Turin as the Monocle team, albeit a team of one, stops by at one of the few urbanism festivals that managed to go ahead this year. Despite uncertain regulations and uninviting border restrictions, an exciting team of designers, thinkers, and city makers still assembled in the north of Italy, as well as dialing in from around the world to discuss what's at stake right now for the city itself. Ahead, we talk to the festival's organiser, as well as some of the inspiring speakers who made this year's edition of the event an even more memorable one than it already was set to be. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. While the urbanism event circuit, yes, there is one, certainly didn't hum like usual this summer, there was at least one of the festivals on our radar that managed to go ahead despite its own laundry list of challenges. Utopian Hours, an event organised by Torino Stratosferica in Italy's northwestern hub of Turin, took place over 3 days in late September, offering up a fresh perspective and visionary voices from near and far. To get a rundown on how this year's programme went ahead and to look back at some of the highlights, I'm joined now by Luca Ballerini, founder of Torino Stratosferica and organiser of the Utopian Hours Festival. Luca, firstly, well done on staging this very successful event, a very tough time. Can you tell us about this year's edition of the festival and what your focus was?
Well, the focus this year was, we had a theme for the very first time, and the theme was the city at stake. You know, we put forward this theme in February when COVID was not as bad as we know now. But we felt the need to rediscuss about the role of cities, not just their form, the political issues, but also the issue about liberty, freedom, and being around the city doesn't feel as it felt in the past. Cities now are a little bit more, not just the place we were used to longing for, and some people are actually quitting cities. So we felt the need to discuss about it, and we had several voices, of course, talking about the pros and cons of living in cities and how cities can change in the near future.
So tell our listeners, what's the balance between, the festival happens in Turin, what's the balance between what happens in the city and the desire to see what's happening in other cities around the world? Because you bring in lots of guests from all sorts of places. How important is Turin as the hosting base for the festival?
Well, we think of Turin as a test bed, in a way, to see what could be done. Of course, we bring forward many ideas that we work on during the whole year with brainstorming and visioning sessions and bringing to the table several representatives of the creative industry, the cultural industry from the local scene. So we discuss the future of Turin, and then Utopian Hours Festival becomes a platform to discuss both the future of the city of Turin, but at the same time, the city in general, the city as a concept. And so that's why we are always looking for best practices and good practical things that have happened in cities around the world. And we invite the people who have actually done these things to tell us how they managed to do these things in their cities. So it's a real dialogue between how Turin could become a better city, improving and learning from other cities around the world. And it's very inspiring, of course, to have a concentrate dialogue between 50 plus people coming from different cities in Turin and discuss these issues. Very contemporary issues, very pressing, urgent issues facing, the challenges that cities are facing today.
So that's 50 speakers, because I guess both digitally and in the space. How many people viewed the talks and things this year?
Well, this year we had a fantastic mix because it was unprecedented for us. So we decided to go also live streaming 2-3 weeks before the festival, because we could see, the tide coming of a second wave. of COVID. And of course, in the beginning, we had like 35 people that were coming in person. And then in the end, it was 50-50. So we actually had 26 speakers in person and 24 talking remotely. So we had 800 people coming to the festival in person. This year, because of the situation, we had to put up a ticket. And then we had nearly 2,000 people following the festival on live streaming. And that was, for us, it was a success because we definitely enlarged our audience to a more, you know, more international, at least on a European level, audience.
Now, Nolan Giles, an architecture editor amongst many other things and has his own podcast here on Monocle 24, he came to see you and take part in the event. And I know that he got to chat to Jeroen Beekmans, who's the co-founder of Pop-Up City. Now, you do this interesting thing every year where you get somebody to be a visiting urban explorer. You kind of send them off to look around Turin. Tell me, what did he find and what was your hope with this program?
Well, we're very happy of this format of visiting urban explorers, and this is the fourth year we do it. So it's very simple because it happens to every one of us. When we get back to our city, we've been around for a while. Well, not in these days, unfortunately, but usually, you know, you come back to your hometown and you try to see it with the eyes of someone who's never been there before. And so this is exactly the concept at the core of this format. We invite people who have never been before to Turin. We ask them to go around, explore the city by themselves for 3 days. And then on the fourth day, they have to come on stage with very little preparation, of course, because they didn't have the chance apart from these last 3 days of walking around, maybe talking to some people. And then they have to come up with ideas and suggestions. So Jeroen Beekmans of Pop-Up City from Amsterdam, he very much focused on one of the issue which is more problematic for us in Turin, which is the quality of air, which is very, very bad. You know, the quality of life is very high in Turin for many reasons, but the quality of air is just, I think, one of the lowest in Europe. So it's a real nightmare. And so he addressed this directly, you know, with no carves, and went directly there and said, hey, Turinese people, you have to do something for this. So I was trying to suggest that from small initiatives, bottom-up initiatives, to more high-profile strategic thought to how we could address this issue of having a very polluted air. And it was inspiring, of course. And I think the audience is very happy to hear people talking about this because you can really get how even someone that's coming from another country, another city, can get some very important issues and things and face it about your city very intimately, just by being an urban explorer for 3 days.
Well, let's have a listen now to some of Jeroen's conversation with Nolan. Jeroen began by shedding some light on what he had found so far while roaming through the streets of Turin.
Actually, one instruction on the list was to not really go into the city centre or explore the outskirts a bit more, but I just walked to a direction and I ended up in the city centre in the first place, so I needed to get out there. What intrigued me was, the grid pattern of the city and also the view on the Alps, of course. I mean, you can, especially today, it's a beautiful day, you can watch the Alps from afar. I think that's really, really cool. So I discovered that the city actually has an external skyline instead of an internal skyline, which I think is super interesting. And then at some point I ended up at the riverside, the Po, and I think it's funny to feel how the city there sort of, you know, it transforms into a more quiet and easygoing place, a bit away from all the cars and all the traffic. And I also visited Bunker, which is it feels like a temporary place, but it's somewhere in the outskirts. It's a combination of a climbing hall, a theater space. It's all open air. There's, of course, a vegetable garden. There's a bar outside. It was pretty cool, but, you know, it's COVID time, so everything was closed. So I was sort of walking around there on my own in the grayish rain. So it's a very peculiar experience, to be honest. Yeah, pretty nice.
So we're here at Utopian Hours, which is a festival all about urbanism, which is quite a rare thing, but obviously it attracts a big audience here. It's been going for a while. There's clearly an interest. What do you think makes this event so special?
I think there's a great bunch of people at the event. I mean, I've been to quite a lot of festivals, urban festivals, and I think they've curated a really, really good program. So I think there's some really good ideas here. I believe there is a group of people that really want to move things forward. I believe that the people living in Turin, I think they're known as being a bit introverts and fans of the status quo. And I believe that these type of events and this group of people really has some tools to push things forward and make change.
One of the things I've noticed being here is, as a city, it feels very walkable. And I went out yesterday morning and it was nice to be in an environment where there's cafes open, there's people walking their children to school. It feels like it's very, I guess, dense is probably a good way to describe it, especially kind of around where we are here. Do you feel the city as a place of excitement, of good energy? I mean, we're talking at a time when, you know, most of our cities are kind of losing their soul a little bit, especially in this era of COVID, but also just looking back and you were seeing our city centers become, you know, places of luxury shops and losing a bit of character. Do you feel Turin in a way has retained its character? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, Turin is known to be an alternative city, like not a prime tourist destination. You know, people, when they go to Italy, they visit Florence and Venice, of course, and Rome. Turin is often overlooked. And the interesting thing is people go to these authentic Italian places because they're looking for authenticity, but the huge numbers of tourists showing up there actually result in these places becoming more generic and less authentic. So I think Turin is in maybe a pole position to be this authentic city that we're all longing for.
And maybe we shouldn't talk about that too much in case people start turning up here and making it a bit more touristy. But I'm really interested in your work. From what I understand, you do a bit of like pop-up interventions in cities. You do a lot of projects. What's been on the agenda this year? I'm especially interested because of the current situation.
The city of Amsterdam is a client of us, one of the bigger clients. We are running a strategic placemaking program in the southeast part of the city. For those who've been to Amsterdam, it's near the Ajax football stadium. It's now an office park, very monofunctional. City wants to build 15,000 homes in the coming two decades there. It's very suburban, you know, it was built in the 80s and 90s, very car-centered. They have asked us to curate a strategic program in which we bring energy and life to this area. So we link empty real estate owners with people with good ideas. We just developed a food truck strategy for the area to make public space more livable and more vibrant. We commission a lot of public artworks. And in the COVID time, actually, I always look at city making as we work on the intersection of urbanism, urban design, and communication. And it's a lot about perception, of course. I mean, you can really change a place by changing perception of a place. And this anti-communicative part, this PR marketing of a place, can just continue, even in COVID times. So I still have quite a lot of work to do.
I guess what you're doing, there's not like a one-size-fits-all solution for every different environment. In fact, it's probably an exact specific thing for each specific place. So I'm just wondering a little bit about your process, how you kind of examine a place or a project, how you think about it, and then how you create action there.
Yeah, talking about this project I just referred to, one of the big challenges for us was to engage the local community. So the city of Amsterdam, this place we're working in, this district we're working in, there is a railway track running through it on the one end. On the one side, there is this office park, which I just explained about. On the other side of the railway track, there is one of the most deprived areas of the city, an arrival city. A huge African community living there. And one of the very important aspects of our work is to make these communities benefit from all the big money that's invested by the project developers on the other side of the railway track. So the first thing we did when we were starting to work in this area was find local partners, a local creative agency with a huge network in the local community, also to sort of gain credibility, not, you know, come there as an outside force and telling people what they should do. So we really, really built sort of a platform which facilitates good ideas that are already present in this neighborhood. And that's, I think, super, super important to do.
And is that more difficult to do in a place that you don't know so well? If you were to come here to Turin, for example, is it really about activating the people of a place? And how do you do that as a foreigner?
I think you have to identify the people and the organizations that really play a pivotal role in society here in the city. Really spend some time in getting to know these people. And they are the gateway to other people, other networks.
So I guess the medium that you work in is something that we're seeing more and more of. And I'm really interested to know, are you now able to kind of work at a deeper level with cities when you're engaging with developers, with city governments? are they more interested in something that actually has a bit more meaning rather than, you know, just superficially plonking something temporarily down in a site? How deep do these people want to go?
There is some good guys in the market and some bad guys in the market. You know, there's a lot of project developers and investors who are for the quick money, quick wins, especially in Amsterdam with the booming housing market. People are calling it a bubble at the moment. But there's also a lot of good guys. One thing is with the city, we're working closely with the city in this transformation area, and we really try to find new mechanisms to, for instance, reward investments in the public domain by project developers with, for instance, the opportunity to develop more floor space.
Jeroen Beekmans, co-founder of Pop-Up City and one of Utopian Hour's visiting urban explorers there, speaking with Nolan Giles. I'm still here with Luca Ballerini, organiser of the Utopian Hours Festival. Now, Nolan also got the chance to speak with Stephanie Backer, one of the authors of Future Cities, which looks at up-and-coming cities all around the world, from Kinshasa to Lima to Addis Ababa. Now, Luca, what were you hoping to explore here? What was your ambition with this guest?
Well, the ambition here is, of course, to bring an aspect of cities that we're very keen of, which is, of course, the creative culture, underground cultures, music scene, everything that's coming up, and it's not very much recognized on the superficial level. So you have to dig a little bit to find this thing out. And this is exactly what they've done. Stephanie Backer and her late companion, she unfortunately died in June this year, they've done a remarkable effort in understanding the creative cultures of this upcoming metropolis. And so they portrayed these cities in ways that very rarely are shown. The idea behind it was, of course, to see some cities that are less known than others, of course, first of all. So we had, for the first time, we had the opportunity to see big cities from Asia, South Africa, South America, that have been rarely, I would say, showcased in our festival in the past years. And at the same time, of course, leverage some of these creative industry forces that are shaping actually the image of the city in the future. So as you know, we're very much concerned about what image our city, your city, is projecting to visitors, to tourists, to people who are considering of moving there. So the image of the city, of these cities, came out in a very good shape. So I think this was a very good contribution to the festival this year.
Let's have a listen then to Stephanie's chat with Nolan. Stephanie began by sharing the ideas behind her Future Cities project.
Future Cities, it's about five cities, five emerging cities around the world. It's about Kinshasa, Lima, Yangon in Myanmar, Medellin and Addis Ababa. And these are not the cities you think about immediately when thinking about the future of the world. But at the same time, these cities are all growing very fast, in economic sense and in demographic sense. And that's what surprised us a lot. And we wanted to know, what are they doing so well and how is life over there? Because before we went to Kinshasa, we didn't know anything about Kinshasa. What we knew were the stereotypes like war and poverty and rebels. But what we found out is that there's a complete different story to tell as well. And that's what we focused on with Future Cities. We focused on the strength of the city instead of focusing on the problems.
So what are some of these stories that you kind of uncovered there? What is the positive nature of these cities? Could you just share with us a few examples?
Yeah, what we found out, for instance, is that talking about Kinshasa, all we knew before we left was the stereotypes you see in the media, war and poverty. And what we found out is that Kinshasa has the most stylish people, I can say, more or less, in the world. There are a lot of fashion shows. There are suppers, stylish men battling together. Which group is the most stylish? In Lima, for example, I've been there 15 years ago while traveling. And I had for 6 weeks rice and beans. And I heard someone telling a chef that Lima had a gastronomy boom. So we went there and we had the most fantastic food. And what we saw is that this gastronomy boom is changing the city and is changing lives as well. So Yeah, Future Cities focuses on the strength of the city, but we do not neglect the problems. So the starting point of our stories is different. It starts with strength, with talent of people, and from there you come to a kind of more balanced view on the cities.
And the way you've documented it, you've done it in a very kind of beautiful way and a real storytelling approach to the subject. But now that you've created the stories or you've told the stories, what do you intend to do with them?
Actually, we've been working for almost 5 years on this project. And that was also because we want to disseminate the stories in a different way. So we published our stories in global newspapers, in magazines. We did exhibitions, lectures, and we have an independent web documentary. What I really like that the project became an inclusive project. Twice we organized an exhibition in the presence of the protagonists. For instance, in Quito, we were invited by the United Nations to do an exhibition at their Habitat 3 City Summit. And we invited as well three of the protagonists, one from Kinshasa, one from Yangon, and one from Lima. And they also were able to tell the stories about their dreams and their lives and their vision on the future of their cities. And normally, these city summits are about architecture, policies, and not about people. And that's what we added. And yeah, that's what I'm kind of proud of.
I used to live in Southeast Asia and I've seen developing cities. And in a way, these places, because they're growing so quickly economically, they can be quite nimble in a way and alleviate problems in some ways faster than in more developed cities, whether that's in Bangkok creating amazing public transport infrastructure very quickly and alleviating all the traffic issues they have there. Did you take any learnings from these cities and see ways that they were alleviating issues in the urban environment that maybe could be transferred to a developed city?
You know, what I learned from these cities and from the people that live there is that they can dream. We had Elsa, a girl from Lima, living in one of the slums, and she's studying at a social cooking school. And she was with us when we opened the exhibition in Amsterdam. And we invited young people from the Netherlands to talk about dreams. And Elsa had a very clear dream. And these Dutch kids that almost have everything, they had no dreams. So what I learned from these people in these emerging cities, that they have dreams and that they work very hard to realize their dreams. And that's what I think it's fantastic.
And it's super refreshing to hear that. And is this kind of what you're here to do today, to kind of to show that there's this ambition in these places and this excitement? Like, what do you plan to really share today?
Our motto from Future Cities is hear the city, meet the people, feel the energy. So I want to transmit the energy, the knowledge and the inspiration from these cities into our worlds.
So the variety of places you went to is very different. You went to different continents, but were there similarities in these places?
Yeah, of course, these cities were very, very different from another. But yes, what we found was that our project is basically about identity, authenticity, talent of the people. And what we found is that the real talent of people cannot thrive under bad economy, cannot thrive under repression. And what we saw is that in all these cities, now they have more economic growth. They have more political freedom. Now, the talents people always had start to flourish. And that also enables change in other aspects. And that's what we saw happening in all these places.
Stephanie Backer, co-author of Future Cities there, in conversation with Anne Olin-Giles. Back to you just finally, Luca. Well done again for getting everything to go ahead. We're all hopeful that things will be easier in the years to come in terms of bringing people together for these important discussions. What do you hope to be doing next year and beyond with this festival?
Well, the thing we're very happy for is I was really impressed by how much the speakers could, even if participating remotely, could understand the feeling. And I would also say the kind of tone of voice of this festival, you know, from the name itself, Utopian Hours, it's definitely a time during the year or a time during the day when we have to push forward, we have to be more visionary. And so everybody, you know, from Reach of Florida to MVRDV, you know, many people who participated really felt this. And so I think that our ambition now is really to become one of the best moments during every year to bring great minds together and to feel together a kind of more progressive and more conscious thinking about cities in the future and our future as human beings, of course, in urban environments. So, and this year particularly, because it was so difficult and the audience could feel it and the guest speakers could feel it, it was a real utopia in itself, you know, bringing people from all over the world, virtually or physically, in the same place for 3 days, just talking about cities. And cities are our future. So it was a great effort for everyone that was involved. And the outcome, the inputs, and also the passionate and heartfelt messages that we were able to gather during these 3 days were outstanding. So for us, our organizers, it's really something we want to push forward and get to another level for the next year edition.
Luca Ballerini of Torino Stratosferica and organizer of the Utopian Hours Festival in Turin, thank you for joining me. Well, that's all for this edition of the programme. Our thanks to Nolan Giles for reporting for us from Turin. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Rabello and David Stevens, and David also edited the show. To play you out of this week's episode, well, here's Ostra with Utopia. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.